when the night sky is cold, the night sky is at its brightest, clearest, and most glorious. For stargazers, cold winter months bring peak viewing conditions, and that's a great reason to look forward to winter. It's our stargazing edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There are scientific reasons why the winter sky is a treat for backyard astronomers, and Jim Lattice is our guide to the nighttime gems. He teaches astronomy at the UW-Madison Department of Astronomy and is director of the UW Space Place. That's an astronomy outreach center. Jim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, let's first look at why we should bundle up and really get into winter stargazing. What is it about the winter months in the night sky?
Well, probably the biggest factor is that the winter sky is, if we're talking about the evening, when most of us do stargazing as opposed to early in the morning, the winter evening sky is very rich in bright stars and interesting constellations, some of the best-known constellations. In the sky, for example, Orion are prominent in the winter evening sky, and the winter Milky Way arches high overhead. So if you're in a dark location, there are lots of interesting objects in the Milky Way to see with binoculars or a telescope. But even without any equipment, there's beautiful bright stars and prominent constellations.
So take your pick: summer or winter night sky viewing. Which would be better?
Oh, that's really tough because they're unique. Each is different. Of course, and each presents its own challenges. You do have clear, dark skies in the wintertime, but you have to prepare a little bit more for that, or you get uncomfortable standing outside for too long. The summer sky is wonderful too, but you have to deal with the mosquitoes. So I'd be hard pressed to choose.
And air temperature, does that, if there's more humidity in the air, does that create issues with stargazing at all?
Well, it depends a lot on your specific location. Yeah, humidity is a problem, and in the summer, it's easy to have your telescope lenses dew up because of the humidity in the air, for example. And it can also make the air a little bit less clear. But it can also be a little calmer in the summer because you often don't have the strong temperature differentials that we have in the wintertime. At least if you're in the city, for example, then there are little pockets of hot, or I should say, of warming air because of buildings and things with their heating on. So you might have more turbulence in the city in the wintertime. So again, it's kind of a give and take.
And it's hard to get away from all the light, is it not? I mean, you have to find a park or somehow get out of the city.
Sure. Well, most of us, 9 out of 10 of us live in some kind of city where there's light pollution of some degree. It's worse the deeper and the bigger the city you're in. So yeah, it can take some effort. You can often, in a city, still find some place where at least you don't have bright lights in your face, like in a park or something along that line, even in a city park where maybe the trees or block your direct view of, say, a parking lot light, but you'll still have the ambient, the overall light pollution. So getting out of the city, if you're serious about the stargazing, is a really good idea.
And Jim, also letting your eyes adjust once you are out of the light, it takes a while for even your eyes to adjust to the dark.
Yeah, that's a good point. So you can't just step out the back door and take a glance up at the sky. You can do that just to see if it's clear, but you can't then expect to see more subtle things unless you give your eyes at least a few minutes, but really as much as a half an hour. But before you're a dark adapted. But that's assuming that you're in a dark place already. If you walk in my backyard, then there's plenty of lighting where I live in Madison, and so I don't have to worry too much about that.
Jim Lattice is with us. He's an astronomy instructor, director of UW Space Place. We're talking about winter stargazing. What is your most memorable experience behind a telescope? What did you see? Do you look at eclipses, meteor showers, and what brings you out to gaze at the night sky? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jim, can we just go out and look at the sky, or do we need equipment? How important are telescopes to really enjoy the experience?
Well, there's plenty to do at sort of all levels. You don't really need any equipment beyond, say, a star map, a paper star map, and a dim flashlight. Will keep you busy for quite a while just learning constellations and looking for the subtle, if you're in a dark sky, looking for the subtle objects, star clusters and bright nebula, things like that. But probably the best step beyond that is not so much a telescope, but a pair of binoculars. Even a pretty common pair of binoculars that you might have around the house will be an amazing step forward. Let's just say summer or winter, if you are in a dark, relatively dark site and you take out your binoculars, you can begin to explore the Milky Way. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned memorable experiences. One of my most memorable experiences was the first time I was visiting a friend of mine who lived out in the country. This was before I was in college even, and I happened to have a pair of binoculars available, and I sat in a lawn chair and gazed into the Milky Way through the binoculars for quite a while, and it was just really amazing. I didn't know what I was looking at from one minute to the next, but the rich star fields of the Milky Way and the star clusters and things are really great. So a pair of binoculars is a great way to start, and there are very good binoculars that some that are better for astronomy than others, but pretty much any pair of astronomers pair of binoculars would just start it. Then telescopes are important if you're more serious about astronomy. Of course, to see planets, to see any detail on the moon, to see much dimmer objects, you're certainly going to need a telescope of some sort. But there's a wide range of telescopes that are available there, and you have to be maybe a little bit careful about that, because some inexpensive telescopes that are more or less toys can sort of be more of an obstacle than anything else. So I usually recommend that people spend some time with a pair of binoculars and decide that this is really something that they want to get into a little bit more before investing in a telescope.
And there are also a bunch of phone apps out there that can really help you understand what you're looking at.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And I mentioned the paper star map earlier. That was at the low-tech end of things, and, of course, that's what we used to do. But, yes, you're quite right. There's a bunch of software out there now that both at your own, at a computer, on a laptop or something along that line, there's an excellent and free program called Stellarium that you can download. Just Google for that, Stellarium, and you can use that to find out what's going to be in the sky and help plan some observing, or just answer questions about the sky, like what time will one thing or another rise or set. And then the phone apps, some of which are free, some of which you have to pay a little bit for, those can be very, very useful for the same reasons, but of course you can take those outside with you. And some of them will, many of them will have this little feature that it uses the features of the phone. You know, if you hold it up,
you hold it right,
it will try to tell you what you're looking at. And that's great, although it takes a little bit of practice to make sense out of that. I've seen people more confused with those than anything else.
Yeah, we'll hang on the word try there, Jim. We're talking winter stargazing on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Astronomer Jim Lattice is our guide to the winter night sky, and you have a line at 800-642-1234. Where do you like to go stargazing? Are you willing to share your secret spot? There are astronomy organizations all over the state. Are you part of one? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation in a moment on the Ideas Network. The quadranted meteors are the first showers of 2019, and we have opportunities coming up on January 3rd and 4th. Then on January 20th, a supermoon and a total lunar eclipse will coincide. Got some details on those. We're stargazing here on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The best way to see a meteor shower is to get a location that has a clear view of the entire night sky, and it's best to use your naked eye to spot a meteor shower. Binoculars or telescopes will just kind of get in the way, limit your field of view. We're getting tips from Jim Lattice, who stays with us. He teaches astronomy at UW-Madison College of Letters and Science, and he directs the UW Space Place. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Do you like to brave the cold and check out the stars this time of year? If so, what do you like to look for? Where do you like to go stargazing? Call in. There's a line for you. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Well, Jim, let's get into a few things happening in the night sky in the coming weeks, starting out with a meteor shower January 3rd, it looks like, the Quadrantids meteor shower.
Yeah, that's right. That's the seems to be the first one off the bat most of years. Meteor showers occur on an annual cycle, so you see them within a day or two of the same date from year to year. Usually they shift very slowly. So the Quadrantids, the January shower is this year. It occurs at a good time because it's only a couple of days before the new moon, and that's really the key for meteors, is to get a dark sky. So as you mentioned, you need to find a dark sky, but you also need to plan your meteor shower observing for when the moon is not interfering. So this is a good one for the Quadrantids. The Quadrantids are a peculiar meteor shower, though. Many people are familiar with, say, the Perseids in August, one of the most watched ones. By the way, it's a bad year for us in August because it's nearly a full moon at the time of the peak of the Perseids in August. But the Quadrantids unlike the Perseids, which are active for days to weeks even, the Quadrantids peak quickly in just a few hours. So you have to kind of be outside and watching at the right time for the peak to happen, and they tend to be faint. So they're not one, although they're prominent in the year, they're not one that many people have had much success observing.
And so when you look at the night sky, where are they? Like, where should our point of reference be?
Well, most things are named after a constellation, but you'll look a long time before you find the constellation Quadrans, which is what they're named after, because that was made obsolete quite a long time ago and is not on modern star charts. But the you don't actually need to look for any particular part of the sky. All you really need to do is look. Meteors will occur. Meteor trails will occur pretty much over a whole hemisphere, and so looking north in this case, because the old what's called the radiant point of the Quadrantids is in the northern part of the sky. So you really just sort of set up your lawn chair in kind of the, in this case, generally facing north, but they will occur over an entire half of the sky.
Well, I orient myself everywhere between Big Dipper and Little Dipper. I feel like, okay, just tell me in relation to those.
Well, that will do it just fine. Yeah, just faced towards either the Big Dipper or the Little Dipper. Actually, the radiant point is near the Big Dipper. But again, you don't even need to be able to find that. Just generally look north and watch for them because they occur over a broad region of the sky.
Well, let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Mike joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Hi. My comment is the best way to see the stars that I have found is to be in the middle of Lake Michigan. And the best way to do that, I have found, is to take the SS Badger from Manitowoc to Ludington and return in the evening time on a clear night. And the stars are really there in all their radiant splendor.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And being out on the water to look up at the stars, that probably has, in and of itself, just a magical quality, Mike.
There's no light pollution at all. And on a clear night, one sees the stars from horizon to horizon. It's beautiful. Horizon to horizon.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for that suggestion. Jim, how about that?
Yeah, that's a great idea. Now that's on my to-do list.
I love it. I love it. Well, Mike, is there anywhere else that you like to go stargazing? Any other tips for us?
When I took the bed, well, I've taken the Badger frequently, but I came back at nighttime maybe a year or two ago with my children, and I was amazed. I forgot there were stars out there, really. I mean, what one sees in Milwaukee at nighttime is a star here, a star there due to the light pollution, but in the middle of the lake, I was absolutely amazed that there were that many stars out there. I hadn't seen that in years.
That might be a situation where you could, if the ship is steady enough, you could use binoculars as well. You couldn't use a telescope in a case like that, but maybe if there's a way to get comfortable on the ship and it's not too and the water's calm enough, you might even be able to use binoculars. But certainly naked eye viewing, that sounds like a really great idea from there.
Well, one could certainly use binoculars, I believe, because it's a large ship, and it's stable in good weather, of course. And you know, you really don't even notice the movements for the most part.
Mike, thank you so much for the call and the tip. We appreciate it. Jim, there's a new moon coming in early January. Is that a good time, perhaps, to see some things in the sky we wouldn't normally see?
Well, the new moon, in fact, in January, that's the occasion of the eclipse that you mentioned. In fact, that's really probably the first thing people ought to put on their calendars for astronomical events in the new year, because that's the night of the 20th of January will be the mid-eclipse will be about 11:15. 11:13, actually, in Madison, in our time zone. And so you can see lunar eclipses happen slowly, so you can go out and see the early stages of it even earlier than that if you don't want to wait until the end, which will be then early the following morning. The night of the 20th, we have to hope for clear weather, because that new moon will... I'm sorry, that's the full moon. That will be the thing to watch for, is that total lunar eclipse. The new moons, of course, you don't really need to wait for new moon to do stargazing. It's just that's when it's best. And for example, that's when things like meteor showers. But there's plenty of bright objects in the winter sky too. There's no reason to put off stargazing until new moon. In the evening winter sky, you've got Orion and a broad selection of bright stars and constellations up there, and the moon is not much of an obstacle to exploring those.
What is the meaning of a supermoon when we hear that term? What does that mean?
Well, yeah, that's kind of a new thing that that pops up in the media here and there. What it means is that the full moon is occurring fairly near the time of lunar perigee, which is when the moon is closest to the Earth. So the moon is not in a circular orbit, it's in a slight elliptical orbit. So at some points in its orbit, it's a little bit closer to us, and on the opposite side, then a little bit farther away. Hence, it looks slightly bigger and slightly smaller at those times. So it's kind of an arbitrary thing, but I think the definition most people use is that if perigee happens within 24 hours of the full phase, then they call that a super moon, which is sort of leads you to expect something kind of super, but most of us would just look up there and say, oh, that's the full moon, because you can't put it then side by side with a full moon at any other time in order to notice the difference. And it's kind of a small difference, but yeah, that's right. So the total lunar eclipse on the 20th, and lunar eclipses always happen at full moon, that will also be a so-called supermoon.
And what about like red moon, blue moon, these colors that we put with moon?
Right. So there's a bunch of those. So once again, a total lunar eclipse has in the press lately is referred often as a blood moon.
Blood moon, yeah.
Yeah, which is a little bit misleading. These things I guess, make for good headlines, but a total lunar eclipse under certain circumstances, and it's not uncommon, the disk of the moon at the mid eclipse will appear red, a dull reddish sort of glow, and so that's the origin of the blood moon sort of thing. However, it's not always the case. The moon is not always necessarily a deep red color at totality, so it's also a little bit misleading. A blue moon is something else entirely. It has nothing to do with the appearance of the moon, but the time when the full moon appears. And there's at least two common definitions of that that contradict each other. The most common one that you see is the second full moon in a calendar month.
Aha. Uh-huh. And we have to leave it right there. Jim, this has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Kate.
Jim Lattis teaches astronomy at the UW-Madison Department of Astronomy and is director of the UW Space Place and Astronomy Outreach Center. Coming up next, Wisconsin Life celebrates what makes our state so special. We'll take a look back at the year of 2018. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There is this storytelling unit at Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television that works to draw us closer to our state. Wisconsin Life celebrates the uniquenesses all around us. And over the last year, it has told stories looking at baseball history, looking at farming, food traditions, and a lot more. So we're going to look at the highlights, the stories that stuck with us. And Maureen McCollum is an executive producer of Wisconsin Life. Maureen, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So tell us, what makes a Wisconsin Life story? What is Wisconsin Life?
So Wisconsin Life is a series of radio stories that explores the people, places, history, and culture of Wisconsin. As you can hear, that's a pretty broad range. So it's, in a way, it's like anything goes. But what we try to do is find really interesting people or take really unique looks at things that are just in our culture and try to understand why it's even a part of our culture.
Well, let's dig into some of your favorite pieces that aired this year. And it's so much fun that you curated this, because this is just going to be such a fun listen. So tell us about what we learned from some young farmers in the Milwaukee area.
So the young farmers were such a delight. I had first heard about them at a conference I attended, actually. And the young farmers, they're a group of students. They call them young farmers. And they work out of a Boys and Girls Club in Sherman Park in the Milwaukee area. And what they do is they have this little garden set up. And essentially, they're just learning how to garden, how to farm. The project itself is run through Groundwork Milwaukee. But what I really liked about this project, because, you know, there are community gardens across Wisconsin. But with this project, the young farmers themselves really take ownership of what they're growing, but they also sell the produce. So I really liked that aspect, and maybe we should hear from a couple of the young farmers.
This our sunflower seed. We built this so it can attract bees. I don't know if they went, but once they pollinate, it make our flowers better. So we try to put more flowers in there instead of putting like more lettuce.
What I like most, I like watering the plants because I like seeing them grow more, and it helps me realize how much farmers do for us.
Yep.
Michaela Corman, 13 years old.
We did let folks know that the farm stand is open, so if folks come, we can open that up. In fact, you already see we got a chalkboard, so we're gonna put farm stand. I want us to go.
It says farm stand. We have basil, lettuce, radishes, collard greens, beets, chocolate mint, green tomatoes.
Plus,
low prices.
It should be like under $4. Keep it cheap.
Keep it cheap, under $4.
I love it. And there's this point in the montage where the young girl says it helps us realize how much farmers do for us.
It really does, because in talking with a lot of these young farmers, you know, they all had different experiences with gardens. Some of them grew up with their parents gardening, others didn't. And so that was really interesting to see. And what I loved about this story was that if you listen to the entire piece at wisconsinlife.org, I mean, it's really fast moving, and it almost sounds like there's just, it's slightly chaotic, but it was this controlled chaos, because once the young farmers got to that garden, their energy was so infectious. They were so happy to be there. You know, they headed to the strawberry plant and started looking to make sure there were strawberries ready. One person got to weed whacking immediately. The other went to start watering the plants immediately. So it was just capturing all of those sounds and really bringing their story forward. And that was another big thing that was important with that story, was letting the students, the young farmers themselves, tell the stories versus the adults. You'll hear the adults in the story, and the adults are great, but I really wanted to let the young farmers tell their own story.
This has also been a year of bringing in storytellers in lots of different ways. Can you tell us what this has looked like?
Yeah, so the storytellers and showcasing different writers on Wisconsin life is a tradition that was started by my predecessor, Erica Janik, who is also a pretty acclaimed writer herself. Mm-hmm. But she had established a lot of connections and relationships with writers across Wisconsin, and I wanted to keep that going. One of my favorite stories this year was from an author named B.J. Hollers. He's a professor in the Eau Claire area. He has the Chippewa Valley Writers Guild. He did this piece called The Resurrection of Lord God Bird, where he talks about finding these sketches of the ivory-billed woodpecker, which may or may not be extinct.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so beautifully written, and we ended up finding archival audio of this bird. So just bringing together those sounds and his story was really fun. Another one of my favorite contributors, not to play favorites, but Dean Robbins here in Madison, he's been contributing to Wisconsin Life since basically the beginning, since 2011. And he likes to tie Wisconsin into these like interesting moments in pop culture history. This year he did a piece on ice cream sundaes and how they may have started in Two Rivers.
I remember that, yeah.
New York has its own opinion about that.
Yeah.
But right now, next month, we'll be airing a piece about Joni Mitchell that he did, where she did an album cover shot here in Madison. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And so you also have a little excerpt here. Let's see here. A bloody handprint?
Oh, yes. This is another partnership that Wisconsin Life has going with the organization Ex Fabula. They are a storytelling group out of Milwaukee. They're wonderful. They're pretty similar to The Moth, but they're not The Moth. Most of their storytellers have Wisconsin ties. But this piece, Bloody Handprint, it was told at a live Ex Fabula storytelling event. It's about this woman who, her name's Mia Noel. She talks about how she grew up in this city and she always had this fear of the woods. I can totally relate because I had that same fear growing up being a city girl. But then she talks about how her friends go and rent this cabin up when the Apostle Islands had the ice caves.
Mm.
And they rent a cabin. And let's hear what happens next.
And so we get there, and it's a really nice cabin. You know, it's got four bedrooms. It's really big. It's beautiful. We're drinking and getting to know each other. We're playing games and laughing. It turns into like a dance party that goes till 3 a.m. We're like rocking out in this cabin. Then we go to bed. And I think like the sun is kind of coming up. It's really quiet in the cabin. And I wake up, and I have to pee. I get up and I go to pee and I'm a little bleary-eyed, you know, and I go to the bathroom and I come out of the bathroom and I'm like, you know, I think I maybe should get a drink of water. On the wall between the bathroom and the kitchen is a bloody handprint.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, wow, you leave us hanging.
I know. So when that story originally aired, one of our producers and audio engineer extraordinaire, Steve Gotcher, he made that a two-part piece. If you listen online, it's one part, but that story was a lot of fun.
Maureen McCollum is here. She's executive producer of Wisconsin Life, and we're looking back at the year of Wisconsin Life. What is something in your community that celebrates life here in Wisconsin? Do you have an idea for a Wisconsin Life segment? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at wpr.org. So let's turn to another one of your favorites, Maureen. What stuck stuck out to you about a story featuring Appleton musician Adriel Dene?
Well, I love showcasing Wisconsin musicians through Wisconsin Life. And earlier this year, I interviewed Adriel Dene. She's involved with The Refuge up there and Mile of Music. She's played with Corey Chisel and The Wandering Sons. She released her debut album this year, and it was sort of a labor of love for her. And I really wanted to better understand her journey when it came to recording that album. So let's hear from her.
Music for me is really, it's always been my therapy. So I've always played and sang, but it's been a real private thing. I've been in bands and I've always loved the collaborative aspect to making music with other people and even helping to color in another person's vision. But when it came to the idea of sharing my music with other people, my personal songs, that was a real hurdle for me. This is my first swing at my own songs. I've been writing for a long time, and all of the material on the record is, you know, fairly old now, but I think I like the recordings now more than I did when we finished them. I made it in Brooklyn. Actually recorded it in Nora's home studio. She created such a lovely environment. And I'd also never worked with a female producer. I'd never even worked with a female engineer. I was so used to being the only female in recording environments. Probably the most precious thing that I walked away with was an access to trusting myself in a deeper way. And that was watching her. And also, it felt like she trusted me, and that made it easier for me to trust myself.
Oh, wow. That was a sound from a Wisconsin Life story featuring Appleton musician Adriel Dene. And you can hear the full piece on the morning show on December 31st during the 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock hours. Maureen, that's just going to be so wonderful.
It's wonderful. And I apologize. I left out an important detail. Her producer was Nora Jones. The Grammy winner.
She was talking about Nora.
She might have talked about Nora. I should have set that up better.
That Nora.
Yeah. No big deal.
Oh, and so how did you get in touch with her? How did that you make that connection?
I met Adriel in Appleton. I did a story on The Refuge, which is sort of this artist collective, a space for artists to create in that area. I did a story maybe 3 or 4 years ago just to talk about the work they were doing on that space itself. And, you know, I could only use about 45 seconds of Adriel in that story. And I was like, man, you have so much to say. And she was so thoughtful and very interesting. And so I figured once she released that album, that I'd go back and dive into her creation process a little more, and that's what we did.
Mm. How is she doing today?
She's doing great. I know she is, I think she has a couple shows planned in the new year. She'll be playing around the Appleton area, around Wisconsin. I think they had a big holiday show with a handful of those pretty well-known Appleton musicians just before Christmas, so.
Wisconsin Life producers scour the state in search of stories that are humorous, surprising, emotional, thought-provoking. Lots of ways to describe it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We're taking a tour through some of the memorable moments of 2018, and Wisconsin Life producer Maureen McCollum is our guide. What is your Wisconsin food tradition? How did you celebrate it during the holiday season? And Wisconsin Life fans out there, what was your favorite story you heard this year? What stuck with you? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. WPR launched a new project this month called Wisconsin. It feeds off of the curiosities we have about our state, and it's this crowdsourcing effort to get leads on this basic question. What do you wonder about Wisconsin? The project is led by Wisconsin Life, and executive producer Maureen McCollum is our guide as we go through this year of sound-rich stories that help us feel more connected to our community. Is there something about Wisconsin that makes you go, suggest a Wisconsin at 800-642-1234? What is something in your community that celebrates life here in Wisconsin? And Wisconsin Life fans, what is your favorite story shared this year? Call in at 800-642-1234. Maureen, you're very involved in this Wisconsin project. You launched it. Can you tell us more about it?
Sure. As you said, it's a listener engagement project. So the listeners ask the questions and we answer them. You know, here on the Ideas Network, listeners can call up during talk show segments. That's an amazing way to engage with the listeners out there. But this is just another way to engage. So, you know, the listeners help us choose the topics that we're reporting. And then we try to go out and report those questions out.
So one of the questions you've tackled first is Story Lords?
Yes, Story Lords, something I was not familiar with.
But you are now.
A minority in my age group in this state. So Story Lords was a show created by Wisconsin Public Television and the Educational Communications Board in the mid-80s. And it's this show that taught reading comprehension in like schools across the country, a lot of schools in Wisconsin. So, you know, if you're of that age where you remember like the TV being wheeled into the classroom, there's a chance that you saw Story Lords. So I went and, you know, I had a few people ask the question, like, why did this show get made? Where are these people now? And I found a few of the people involved in the show and asked them those questions. And it was a lot of fun.
That is so cool. And it really gives us more of a glimpse as to something that might have been left behind. And
of course. I've started tackling the next Wisconsin story. Someone wrote in a question and said, why are there no Wisconsin songs? Why, when I think of Wisconsin music, can I think of anything? Now, there's a lot around that because I think there's different opinions around that question itself. So my job is I'm going to go out and try to answer that question. That story will be coming later this month.
And then I know we have to wrap up really quickly. You did quite a bit with some food traditions. We don't have time for the clip, but
that's
what
fine.
Are you looking for about food?
So Food Traditions was a collaboration between WPR and Wisconsin Public Television. And we wanted to dive into the food traditions of Wisconsin, kind of beyond the brats and cheese curds, which I love, but
come on.
You know, there's a lot more out there. So on the radio side, Danielle Kading, who's our reporter up in Superior, she did a piece on a woman who makes fry bread on the Bad River Reservation. We reared a piece I did a few years ago on a lutefisk dinner in a Lutheran church basement in DeForest. TV did some amazing pieces too. They talked with this woman, Lucy Lauravon Alaska, who talked about preparing a Hmong feast for her family and just how food really brings her family together. It's a really amazing project. You can see all the stories at wisconsinlife.org/foodtraditions, and we're encouraging other people to share their food traditions if they're on the Instagram.
Cool.
They can do the hashtag foodtraditionswi.
And in the last few seconds we have here, what are you looking forward to when it comes to Wisconsin life in 2019?
So in 2019, I'm super excited. I've been working with a group of high school students from Monona Grove Charter School, MG21, and I've been working with them in getting more younger voices on the airwaves. And so that's just one way that we showcase the diverse voices in Wisconsin.
Well, Maureen, this has been so much fun.
This
Thanks
has
for
been
coming
so
in.
Fun. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Maureen McCollum is executive producer of Wisconsin Life, and she stays with us as we continue our celebration of Wisconsin Life this hour. Maureen caught up with Charlie Behrens for this next story, so let's hear.
Geez Louise, comedian Charlie Behrens has had a huge year. As host of the Manitowoc Minute, he's performing sold-out shows across Wisconsin, and his online comedy news show is continuing to rack up tens of thousands of views. I recently caught up with Behrens to talk more about 2018.
Hey, dear folks, the Manitowoc Minute is one of the greatest news shows in all Wisconsin, the most trusted news show on Facebook, right up there next to Dem Russians. Keep her moving.
So you're back for the holidays. How's that been?
It's been cool. It's been fun coming up with another hour of material. And, you know, Wisconsin's kind of the thing, like, can you do the Wisconsin character? And how far can you go with that? And I'm always surprised by, like, the deeper I go, the more material there is. It's like exponential material.
There's like a constant hunger for people in Wisconsin wanting to make fun of themselves.
I think so.
This week's episode is brought to you by Stump Lake Liquor and Fireworks. Liquor and fireworks, they got it all. The only thing that's missing is your finger. Oh, that's why they call it Stump Lake.
What is it that Charlie Behrens likes to do when he's in Wisconsin with his family?
So we have a big celebration Christmas Eve. Like, I'm one of 12 kids, so Everybody gets together. We exchange gifts. And this is my favorite part. We exchange a gift with somebody who we picked at Thanksgiving. But then we do this like roast of them. So it's like you get them a gift, but nobody really cares about the gift. They all just spend time like really trying to find the best roast of their sibling or mother, father, or whatever. So that's one of my favorite parts
that's
about Christmas.
That's very precious.
Yeah.
So 2018 was a big year for you personally.
Yeah.
But I've always wondered how you walk that fine line between bringing your personal views into either, whether it's on Twitter or through the Manitowoc Minute, but also not completely alienating this like very broad audience that you have.
I think a lot about that. What I am focusing on are issues that I believe, whether you're on the right or the left, we can agree on these things. You know, we can agree that racism is bad. We can agree the environment is good. We can agree that our troops do so much for us. It's important to honor them. I'm having conversations all the time with people on the right and people on the left because they come to the meet and greets after the show. And I feel like I'm getting a sense of where people are at. And nobody is at the Sean Hannity level. You know, nobody is at the Matt Owl, you know, the MSNBC Fox kind of thing, or nobody's there, you know? And those guys, I feel like, do a lot of damage because they are riling people up. For what reason? We need to find common ground. Your ratings should not be important enough that they start pitting people against each other.
And I thought you handled the Baraboo High School photo incident.
This guy, that's not a wave. Okay, calling that a wave is like calling a Mercedes a Toyota. Yeah, they're both cars, but only one was used by Hitler. That's a history joke. Speaking of history, we got to start taking it more seriously in high school and college before we repeat it.
I think you have to address an issue like that, see it for what it is, acknowledge it, and learn from it.
Hate can't fix hate. Only love can. I know that because I read it on the back of a Subaru last week.
I mean, you've had such a crazy year going to Lambeau, going to Miller Park during the playoffs. You have this beer named after you.
Yeah.
I like walk down the streets and I see people wearing their like Keep Removing t-shirts.
Nice.
I mean, that's crazy.
It is crazy.
So I'm wondering for you personally, is it hard to balance who you are with your character? Like, even in this conversation, it's
say,
like, where does Manitowoc Minute Dude end, and where does Charlie Barron's begin?
It couldn't, I don't think, come across as authentic if it wasn't a serious part of me and who I am and, you know, how I grew up.
Well, thank you so much, Charlie, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. And keep her moving. Also, as always, go Packers and f*** the Bears.
Comedian Charlie Barron's is the creator of Manitowoc Minute. And if you want to hear our full conversation, check out WPR's Beta. There, you can hear us talk about the biggest stories of the year, like climate change and the Packers. Just go to WPR.org/beta. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And that song, by the way, that you're hearing, that is Build a World by Appleton musician Adriel Dene. And you can hear the Wisconsin Live feature about her next week on The Morning Show, or visit wisconsinlive.org to dig into all the rich story archives that are completely searchable. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It's The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. Let's take a listen.